Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
There is still a great deal of feeling of sovereignty still existing within the Aboriginal nations, in spite of what has been done to us, and we will continue to struggle to assure that we're able to make decisions in our own right.
That's the voice of Haider Elder Bill Lightbaum. On this week's show, we speak to Bill about the historical and contemporary struggles of Indigenous peoples and the way forward, so stay tuned.
It's important to remember that while we are visitors to this land, to recognize his rightful owners, to recognize that we are in unceded, unrelinquished territory, and to speak about the International Day of Aboriginal People, I have the great privilege of having on our program today Bill Lightbaum, who is our guest. Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm more than happy to be here.
Now, we often think about what it means to be in British Columbia in terms of, you know, BC. We call it BC, but we really don't recognize the historical owners and the people who still are the owners, the rightful owners of this place. What would you say has been the impact of colonization on the silencing of voices of Aboriginal people in Canada?
Well, I think one of the major things, of course, in this day and age is the fact that the majority of the people that are living in British Columbia are probably not familiar or aware of the fact that in British Columbia we have an ongoing system of supposedly treaty-making processes. And the reason for that, of course, is that because the various nations, and by the way, there are many, many nations in British Columbia, there are 26 distinct different nations, as well as numbers of communities within those nations who are negotiating separately their own agreements that are eventually going to become treaties in British Columbia. And the treaties are geared by on behalf of the federal and provincial governments to attempt to transfer the rightful ownership of the land away from the Aboriginal communities to the governments of British Columbia and Canada. And most people don't realize that. They come to this part of the world assuming that the governments actually own the land and resources, and in fact that isn't the case, and that's why the treaty making process. So when you're talking about, you know, what is the major problem for Aboriginal people, I think the major problem is the governments have attempted to ignore the existence of Aboriginal nations and Aboriginal people in British Columbia and Canada, for that matter, now for going on 400 years, and to assume the jurisdiction over our lands and resources, which of course is a legal process and in some cases has not taken place. And when it has not taken place, like in British Columbia as an example, the land still rightfully belongs to the Aboriginal people. And one of the problems, of course, with the situation as it exists in British Columbia is that the governments use every tactic possible to restrict us from being able to exercise our legitimate ownership over the land and resources, as well as our acknowledged Aboriginal rights. And when I say acknowledged, I'm talking about through the justice and the legal process. Our rights are recognized and acknowledged through Canadian law, British law, international law, and of course, because of that, they attempt to isolate us from the rest of the community in British Columbia. And one of the consequences of that, of course, is that the opportunities to be able to progress at the same speed as the rest of society does not exist for Aboriginal people.
I just want to cut in there because you just pointed to something that is of great significance, and that is development has always been defined by people with moneyed interests. We haven't talked about development in terms of the values that we want, in terms of protecting health, protecting community, protecting relationships of respect. I wonder if you could talk about the imposition of the Indian Act and what impact this has on the current model of development, for instance, the Enbridge pipeline that is being forced through Indigenous land against their will.
Yeah, actually, you know, there are numbers of things, and I'll get to that in about half a minute, because it's really important. Important because in this day and age, right now, this is happening. And of course, this is going to have a large impact on the Aboriginal community as well as the rest of the citizens in British Columbia. So you're right in raising it in that sense. But I do want to mention the fact that a form of genocide has taken place in Canada through the process of the residential schools. Now, this is probably one of the most demeaning processes that existed in Canada in relation to Aboriginal people, and it was started in the 1890s or 1880s actually, and the process was one whereby they came into our communities and took away, in a lot of cases they did this by force, they took away the children starting at the age of about 5 years old and never returned them until age 16 after they had gone through a number of years of brainwashing. And of course they drove the language out of the people, out of the children, and when they got home to their own communities they couldn't even carry on a conversation with their own parents and grandparents because the language had been beaten out of them. Now, at that particular time, Duncan Scott was the Minister of Indian Affairs, and he was the most senior public servant in the Department of Indian Affairs, and he promised to kill the Indian in the child. Now, that says the whole thing. It tells the whole story about residential schools. And, of course, the genocidal process, it's recognized internationally as being a form of genocide. But to get back to the other question that you raised in regards to the attitude of corporations, they assume that the only people that they have to deal with, of course, are the representatives of the two levels of government, and that the government has a free right to allocate resources to these corporations, and in fact that is not the truth, and we have been forced to go into the courts. When I say we, I'm talking about Aboriginal nations now, have been forced to go into the courts to stop these kinds of processes happening on our lands. And in about 95% of the cases we have been successful in having the courts recognize our rightful jurisdiction over our lands, to at least to the point where the courts rule that they cannot go into our territories and start harvesting resources in our territories without first discussing the whole issue with the nation within whose territory they're operating, and that some kind of an agreement comes from that. And it isn't quite reaching the point yet where the courts have acknowledged that we, in fact, own all the resources and nobody has a right to them unless we say so. But it's getting close to that point now. Now, the pipeline that you're referring to, of course, is extremely important to the Aboriginal nations whose territory it's going to be traveling through. And when I say that on the basis of the recognition of the number of pipeline leaks that have happened in North America, which are well in excess of 1,000 different leaks, and they are on record, as well as some very serious ones that has been very damaging to the ecology. I won't refer to those. I think most people are aware of the major ones that have happened. But it's the fact that there are many, many others that are not public knowledge, and which also creates the understanding and the realism that, yeah, there's going to be leaks and it's going to be damaging to the ecology. And the various nations in whose territory the pipeline will be traveling are in the process of taking that process to the courts and to get a ruling on that, of course. And our people are not going to allow that to happen. The worst part about it all is, by the way, is that the pipeline is supposedly ending at Kitimat, and of course from there the oil is transferred into oil tankers which will be traveling up and down the coast. And if anyone has ever been to Kitimat on the water, you will find that it is extremely difficult to think of in terms of tankers traveling up the narrow passageways that they must travel through to get to Kitimat. And the fact that remains that some of the most treacherous waters in the world are on the BC coast, and it's not a matter of if an oil spill will happen. As a matter of fact, what it is what will happen when an oil spill will happen, and it will be the destruction of the entire coast.
Today, we continuously see a number of children being removed from indigenous home and placed in foster homes. In essence, that residential school has simply been transformed into a new form of residential school through the Child and Care Protection Services. Can you talk about the impact that this has on the community as a whole, and why this is of this ought to be everyone's responsibility to stop and correct?
Well, as a matter of fact, you know, as I pointed out, it is a form of genocide. There is no question about that, and that's one of the reasons that I mentioned it early on. But I didn't really mention it in passing because I had intended to go back to it, because that is one of the most important things that is happening in this present day and age, is the apprehension of our children from families, which is the continued destruction of the family structures, and, of course, which guarantees a lifetime of difficulty for those children who are apprehended, because for anyone that has ever been taken into a different family, you have to know that you don't fit in there, and you never ever get over it. The attitude, of course, of children that have been apprehended and have grown up in other people's families is that they were thrown away because people didn't want them. And of course that creates a situation where they feel that they have no value in life whatsoever. And of course this is an ongoing process that is definitely happening in this present day and age. And again, I personally believe that it is intentional. And you know, we had a study that was done back in 1992, and it was outlined the whole process of what was happening with the apprehension of our children, and the situation that existed at the community level of the Aboriginal people. And that particular document was about pretty close to 300 pages, I think, and with a whole lot of recommendations that came out of it. But the United Nations got a copy of it, and they liked it so much that the author of that particular document was taken to Australia to the last meeting of that particular year, which was 1993, which is the year of the family in the United Nations, and was one of two speakers that addressed all the leaders of the world in regards to children and families. And anyway, out of that came a process in British Columbia. The NDP was the government in British Columbia at that time, and they created meetings between the Aboriginal peoples and the government of British Columbia, and out of that came what was referred to as the Tawassan Accord. And the Tawassan Accord recognized the need for the Aboriginal nations to be responsible for their own children, and that in fact the entities of government would lose the authority of being able to apprehend our children, and that it would be a matter within the nations to deal with those issues. And there was agreements that were signed at that particular time. Regrettably, what followed after that was an election of the present government, the present Liberal government, and the first thing they did, of course, was quash the Tawassan Accord, and they never ever did implement the agreement that was signed by the NDP government and the nations in this province. So we still have the same issues going on, and you know, one of the realities is that well in excess of 50% of the children that are apprehended by the Department of Children and Families in British Columbia, in fact, are of Aboriginal ancestry. So it's still an ongoing process. And, of course, we only make up 5% of the population here, by the way.
And, of course, you know, the more we distance those links to the land, to the people, the more we can blur the guidelines of the legality of whose land this is. I want to touch on this because you've done a lot of work organizing resistance against the continual atrocities against these salmon, you know, by the imposition of aqua farms. Can you talk about the significance of destroying this resource?
You're right about that too, and you know, being an Aboriginal person, obviously I'm very suspicious of that whole process, because our Aboriginal people have depended upon the salmon for one of the major resources for their food supply for thousands of years. And of course, if there are no more salmon, then we become totally dependent upon government for our survival, and of course we have to go to Safeway and all the other grocery stores out there to get our food supply, rather than living off the land, which creates a certain amount of independence within the various nations. I don't know of one Aboriginal nation in this province whereby the people in the villages don't put up a year's supply of salmon when the salmon are running. And, of course, we smoke them and we can them and we do a whole lot of other things, wind-dry and sun-dried and so on, for a winter supply of food. And, of course, if you take that away, that is just another process and another system of denying us our rights and our means of survival, and of course, which creates more dependence on government.
I just wanted to thank you very much for spending this time with us this morning, and to really highlight the importance of, you know, not only recognizing the injustice, but also changing the structures that continue to locate Indigenous Aboriginal people as dependent of the state and not as a sovereign people as they are by law.
Right. And you know, my last statement is there is still a great deal of feeling of sovereignty still existing within the Aboriginal nations, in spite of what has been done to us, and we will continue to struggle to assure that we're able to make decisions in our own right.
That's beautifully said. Thank you so much for being with us.
And you're more than welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Bill Lightbaum. He is our distinguished guest.
There's a drop of water on the wall, and the drop's about to fall, and it falls into a trickle, and the trickle is flowing down, down, down to the ground, and the moss begins to grow. Watch, 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 watch the water flow, and watch the current become a stream, busting through the seams, cracking through the concrete, bending down the steel, in a raging that is real, a tearing torrent you can feel. Feel the thunder growing, thunder underground, and in my heart, the chains falling apart, the wildness in my soul. And for once in life, for once in life, I know I'm not alone. For the mountains make our bones, with the oceans in our blood, our feet planted, planted firmly in the mud. We are alive, the burning embers in our eyes, the tingling touch upon our skin. And in the heat of passion, we begin to understand that we are of this land, that we are part of Earth. And when it's threatened, we will fight for all we're worth. We watch the dam come crashing down, water rushing to the sea. And now the river, now the river, now the river, now is free. Drops about to fall, and it falls into a trickle, and the trickle's flowing down, down, down to the ground, and the moss begins to grow. Watch, 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 watch the water flow, and watch the current become a stream, busting through the seams, cracking through the concrete, bending down the steel, in a raging that is real, a tearing torrent you can feel. Feel the thunder growing, thunder underground, and in my heart, the chains falling apart, water rushing to the sea. And now the river, now the river, now the river, now is free.
We have come to the end of our program. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program available to campus and community radios. Please visit our website, www.latinwavesmedia.com, to hear previous shows, connect to our media projects, and access other resources, or to support our efforts by making a safe PayPal contribution. I am Sylvia Richardson. Thanks for listening.